Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Mem Chet Amud Bet, four lines from the bottom. And the Gemara asks, V'savar Rabbi Yossi, Zeh V'zeh Goreim Asur? Does Rabbi Yossi really believe in this position that Zeh V'zeh Goreim is Asur? Until now, we've established that Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion of Zeh V'zeh Goreim is Asur. That will explain his position in our mission over here. And in the case of Zeh V'zeh Goreim, the Chachamim believe it's Mutar. And we're able to explain their positions, how they differentiated that from the Mishnah early on, where it seems to be that they have the opposite positions. The Gemara gave reasons both for Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan's position as to why it might be different over there. Now the Gemara is fundamentally asking, does Rabbi Yossi in Shas really hold of Zeh V'zeh Goreim Asur? Don't we have a problem? Batanan. We have a Mishnah in Orla that says, Rabbi Yossi Omer Notin Yichur Shel Orla, you're allowed to plant a branch of Orla. Orla is the fruits of a tree in its first 3 years. Those fruits are restricted as Orla. They're Asur Bachila, and they're also Asur Bana. That application is only to the fruits of the tree, not to the branches or to the tree itself. And that means that if you take a branch off an Orla tree, there's no problem with planting that branch or doing anything you want with that branch because there's no Isur Hana'ah associated with it. On the other hand, Ein Notim Egoz Shel Orla Mipnei Shehu Peri. You're not allowed to plant the fruits of the tree in order that they grow because that's a pri. And the pri is an Isur Hana'ah. And if you plant that which is Isur Hana'ah, then you're getting benefit from that which you planted. So that's very straightforward what Rabbi Yossi says over here. But now we have the qualification of Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Mode Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi agrees, She'im, Nata, V'ivrich, V'irkiv, Mutar. That if he does any one of these items, then it is Mutar. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a braita that supports that, Mode Rabbi Yossi, She'im Nata, if he planted it, V'ivrich, or he took one of the branches, put it into the ground and brought it up somewhere else. V'irkiv, or he grafted it, Mutar, that it is Mutar. Over here, Rashi brings two possible explanations of this, and most of it revolves around the wording of the statement of Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, as well as the Braita, which is Shim Nata, V'ivrich, V'irkiv. Are those three different items, separate items of Nata, V'ivrich, V'irkiv, or are they a compilation of explanations to the first term, which is Ezet Nata, and then after Nata, he also then was V'ivrich, V'irkiv on top of what he was Notea. So Rashi brings both explanations. In the first explanation, he says that all three of these are separate items. And that is that Rabbi Yossi agrees, if he plants the fruit, that's the nata, if he planted the egoz, and now it grows into something, that it would be mutar, v'hivrich, if he did it berech, if he took a branch, put it in the ground, and took it out somewhere else, or hirkiv, or he grafted the items together, in all of those cases, it would be mutar. And as Rashi explains over here, that's because all of those then become zeh v'zeh goreim mutar, that there are two contributing factors to the growth of the item now. When you plant the fruit in the ground, as Rashi notes, you have the fruit or the seeds that come from that fruit, and then the earth and the water that comes and the nutrients that come, those together cause it to grow. So there you have Zeh V'zeh Goreim, and it is Mutar based on this. Same thing with Harkava when you're dealing with grafting. Rashi points out that wherever you have a case where there is a Zekena, an older tree, which is the base or the trunk, and you bring a newer tree over and you graft it onto the older tree, the Mishnah says that Yalda Shesivcha B'Zekena. If you take a younger tree and graft it onto an older tree, bitela, the newer tree is batel to the older tree, and there's no din of orla whatsoever, meaning that the fruits are mutarim immediately because the skena governs in that case. So also by the case of habracha, which is a little harder, when he takes the branch and puts it through the ground, it's the old tree plus the rooting of that branch in the ground that comes up somewhere else that also makes it that it is mutar. So what Rashi is suggesting over here is that in the first case of Nata, where you plant the fruit itself, even though Rabbi Yossi says you're not allowed to plant the fruit, if you do plant the fruit, then it would be Mutar, because you have Zeh V'zeh Goreim. Now, it would only be Mutar after 3 years, because the new tree would grow, and then you'd have to wait 3 years. In the latter two cases of Hivrich V'irkiv, where you either grafted the new tree onto an older tree, or you take the older tree and push a branch through the ground and take it up somewhere else, both of those would be immediately Mutarim in their fruits, because again, it's Zeh V'zeh Goreim, and therefore they would not be subject to Orla, either by the case of grafting, because the old tree is now contributing to the new tree, and that's why it is Mutar right away, because it's Zeh V'zeh Goreim Mutar, and same thing with the Havracha. And in that way, Rashi thinks of all of these three items as being Zeh V'zeh Goreim Mutar, and that would be evidence of the fact that Rabbi Yossi holds Zeh V'zeh Goreim Mutar. Rashi then brings a second interpretation, and says, Lashon Acher, is that Nata means that he planted the fruit. Then after the fruit grew, Hivrich V'irkiv, he took that new tree that grew out of the fruit, and then he grafted it onto something else, or he did Havracha with that tree. And that's what causes the Zeh V'zeh Goreim to be mutar is because you took the fruit of Isur that grew into a tree, and now you did something else with it. So that tree that would have been Asur now is mutar because you either grafted it onto a mutar tree, or you put a branch through the ground, brought up somewhere else, and that new branch gets contribution from the ground. Rashi does not like that pshat because he says, "V'kashali v'lo hivrich u'b'irkiv nami ika zebzeg goreim." Because even without the factor of hivrich v'irkiv, you have zebzeg goreim just from the mere fact that you planted the fruit in the ground and it grows into something. Because then you have different contributing factors, both the fruit itself as well as the earth and the water that's there, and in that way it's zebzeg goreim. So that's the view of Rashi as to how to explain this. First of all, he suggests that Rabbi Yossi is of the view that if you plant the fruit, even though it's a sur, what grows out of it is mutar because of zevzeh goreim mutar, and that the whole statement over here is a proof of zevzeh goreim mutar in the position of Rabbi Yossi. The Balei HaTosafot do not like Rashi's explanation for a number of reasons and favor very heavily Rashi's second explanation. The first question that other Rishonim have on Rashi is the problem that it says here, Rabbi Yossi Modeh. Rabbi Yossi agrees to the Chachamim. Now, that means that the Chachamim believe it is Mutar, and that Rabbi Yossi believes it's Asur, and then Rabbi Yossi comes along and says, I'll be Modeh to you. Now, according to Rashi's first explanation, that means that Rabbi Yossi's Modeh, when you plant the fruit, that Bidiavad, that tree that grows out of it, is Mutar. But that implies that the Chachamim believe that the Chatchila, you can take the fruit of the Orla and plant it in the ground. Since when does anybody allow you to take fruit of Orla and plant it in the ground and have the gidul be mutar lechatchila? There's nobody who thinks that lechatchila that should be okay because there is an isur hanah. And as the Balei Tosafot point out, there's reason to distinguish between Orla and other areas of halacha like truma and tevel where you plant them and the gidulin that come out are mutarim. Over here, there's good reason to believe that it's different because there's not only an isur of achila or an isur associated, there's an isur hanah. And then for any derivative of that item would be considered problematic. And how could the Chachamim suggest over here the Chatchila that you should be able to plant it? And on top of that, even Bidiavad, according to Rabbi Yossi, who says that you planted it, why should it be Mutar afterwards? So that's the first question that the Balei Tosafot have on Rashi's Pshat. The second thing that the Balei Tosafot point out is that Rashi's question on the second Pshat is not really a question. And that's based on what the Balei Tosafot said earlier in the Perek, that Zevzeh Goreim is only relevant when the two gormim are doing or contributing the same thing. That is, before, the Balei Tosafot said that cell is very different than the earth or the nutrients of the earth, and then you can't claim zevzeh goreim there. You can claim zevzeh goreim when you have two things that are providing the same sustenance or facilitation to the item. And that's why he says Rashi's wrong. When you plant the fruit in the ground, the fruit is just contributing the seed. The earth and the water is providing all the nutrients for it to grow. And that's not a case of zevzeh goreim, because they're not providing the same things. They're not both contributing towards the growth of the tree. On the other hand, when you're speaking about harkava, when you're speaking about grafting, or you're speaking about havracha, over there you do have zevzeh goreim, because both items are providing sustenance to the tree. And that's why there's only zevzeh goreim when you add on top of the planting of the item, you add on this idea of grafting or havracha. And that's why the Balei Tosafot would say the question of Rashi is incorrect. And the Ramban points out two other issues with Rashi's explanation. First of all, that the idea of Havracha being Zevzeh Goreim is very precarious because it's the actual tree itself that you're putting through the ground and bringing out somewhere else. And it's hard to argue over there that it's Zevzeh Goreim when it's still attached to the original tree. That's number one. And number two is he points out that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah comes to the conclusion that everybody agrees when it comes to grafting of trees, that we does reset the clock for Orla. And that means that there are sugi over here that both Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim who think that that's not the case would be arguing on the Kulei Alma of the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which is also difficult to say. Based on that, they say that the explanation over here is like Rashi's Lashon Acher. And that is that the reading of the Gemara is Shimnata. If he planted this fruit of Orla, everybody agrees that that is problematic when you plant the fruit of Orla with that which grows from it. But Rabbi Yossi is modeh that in the case where you do havracha or harkava, that that would be mutar because that is a case of zebzeh goreim is mutar. Because then after the fruit that was planted of Orla, that was also bana, that grew a tree, that tree is also asur. But now when you take that tree and then graft it onto a tree that is mutar, or if you take that tree and put a branch into the ground and take it up somewhere else, there you have zebzeh goreim again because the tree is contributing to it. And the earth that you pushed it through is also contributing to it. And that makes it zevzeh goreim mutar. And that's why the latter two statements of hivrich v'irkiv, on top of the fruit that you planted now that grows into a tree, that's where Rabbi Yossi says zevzeh goreim is mutar. Because as the Balei Tosafot point out, that when it comes to grafting, The reason behind grafting is not zev zeh gorei mutar. Regular graft, the way that the Gemara phrases it, is bitela. It's batel to the item or the core that is there. And that means that even the person who says zev zeh gorei is asur, when you graft the new tree onto the old tree, it's batel to the old tree. And that's why it works. It's not because of zev zeh gorei mutar. And that's evidenced by the fact that that grafting makes the fruits mutarim right away. And they're not a vidin of orla waiting 3 years. So it's not a zev zeh gorei, it's because it's batel. So by a younger tree that is placed onto a zakenah, the reason it works over there is because of bitul, meaning that the older tree has so much more significance to the younger branch that it overwhelms the younger branch, and then the whole thing becomes like a older tree. And that's why you're not even chayav in orla. But in our case over here, where you're dealing with branches of two young trees or two trees that are put together, over there, then the heter is coming from zev zeh gorim rather than bitul. Although the Ran does say that the concept of zev zeh gorim is actually a concept of bitul, if that's the case, then you can actually join the two items together and say that the zev zeh gorim here is not different than the bitul that's been spoken about by the younger and older tree. And therefore, the Baal HaTos would say that the story here is a story where Natai planted the fruit, he grew a plant of Isur, and he takes that plant of Isur and now either is Hivrich or Hirkiv. He took that plant, either put it through the ground, took it out somewhere else, or then grafted it onto another item. And in that instance, those are zev zeh gorim mutar. And from Tosu, it is clear that if you just took the fruit and planted it and it grew into a tree, the tree is a tree of Isur, and any fruits produced by that tree are also Asurim. But then, if you took a branch from that tree of Isur, and then grafted it onto another tree, or did Harkava with it, or Havracha with it, in that case, you have an instance of zev zeh gorim is mutar. And that's where Rabbi Yossi says it's mutar. Now, the Chachamim would disagree with him and say zev zeh gorim asur, would believe that that's still asur over here, but they fundamentally disagree with Rabbi Yossi, and they believe that the Isur Allah only applies to the pre itself. But if you have a tree that grows from that pre, that would not be Isur, and that's why the Chachamim are matir over here. They're not matir because of zev zeh gorim, they're matir because they don't believe that the tree that grows from the egos is considered to be problematic. And the distinction, as we noted before, between Orla and other types of Isurim, like Tevel and Maser, is that here you have an Isur Ana'a, and therefore Rabbi Yossi believes anything that grows from it is Asur. Whereas the cases of Tevel and Maser, he will agree that the Gidulim, or that which come from it, are Mutarim Midoraita, just means Midrabanan. Sometimes there is an Isur for Gidulei Chumai, Gidulei Tevel, but that's because they were only a Asur Achila, not an Isur Ana'a. Now, in defense of Rashi Shita, the Ritva says, first of all, sometimes we find when the Gemara uses the term, or the Mishnah uses the term modeh, doesn't mean that there's another party to whom the individual is being modeh. It just means that he is saying, despite his position before of Isur, now he's saying there is a het there, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's being modeh to someone else. And number two is, even if you believe he is being modeh, and there is a set of chachamim that believe when you plant the fruit, that which goes out of it is mutar, which the other Roshonim say, how could it be that which goes out of it is mutar? But the Ramban actually brings from the Yerushalmi another way to explain it, which he likes, and that would help the situation, is that modet the chachamim, that bidyavad, if it was planted, that then it is mutar. That is because Rabbi Yossi obviously believes zev zeh gorim is mutar, but the reason that the chachamim think it is mutar is because Yerushalmi says, shubishum shu kala ba'aretz ad shelo yitzmach, that the pre rots in the ground before it emerges, and therefore the pre is gone. And therefore, the Chachamim believe that that's not a derivative of the pre, or that's not hanah from the pre anymore, because the pre disappears completely. And that's why the growth that comes out of it, bidyavad, is mutar. Now that's all according to the way Rashi and the Baal HaTosafot read the Gemara and bring the quote from the Mishnah. But if you actually look in the Mishnah in Orla, it says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, notim yichur shel Orla, ve'en notim egol shel Orla, mipnu shu pri, ve'en markivim bekafniot shel Orla. We're missing that here in our Gemara, which is that you're not to do harkava with kafniot shel Orla. But if you look in Rabbeinu Chananel, that's exactly how he quotes the Mishnah from Orla. And he says the whole proof is from this kafniot shel Orla, which is actually a machloket between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim as to what the status of these kafniot shel Orla are. Truth is, it's a machloket rishonim as to what the kafniot are, whether they're just the shells of the fruits, or whether they're these immature fruits, which Rabbi Yossi thinks already have a status of pri, whereas the Chachamim believe they do not have a status of a pri, and that's their machloket. If you take these madar, if you take these items and then you graft them onto another tree, are they already pirot? So that causes a problem. Or are these not deemed to be pirot yet, and they're still like ichor shel olah? They're still like a branch of the orla. And that's a machloki between the chachamim and Rabbi Yossi as to the status of these kafniyot shel orla. But the fact that Rabbi Yossi says bidiavad, and that's what's being said here by Rabbi Yehuda, allows you to be markiv them. He says b'tanya behediyah. And the brayta that's brought here, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, says, Mode Rabbi Yossi, that if he put them on, he was markiv, those kafniot shel orla, that whatever is produced from them is mutar. Now, the reason that he says it's mutar is different than the chachamim. He will say they're mutar b'hana, because it's zevzeh goreim, and that's why it's mutar, because you've grafted onto a tree that also now is providing sustenance, and between the two of them, that makes the fruit now mutar. On the other hand, according to the Chachamim, the reason it's mutar is because the fruits themselves are not peirot, and therefore there's no problem of our law at all. So according to this, the Chachamim would be matir lechatchila, this harkava, this type of grafting, because you took it like an ichor shel orla, which even Rabbi Yossi agrees is fine. According to Rabbi Yossi, these are already deemed to be peirot, and the problem is now that you're grafting these peirot onto something else, which would be problematic, but because of zev zegoreim, it's mutar. So in the end, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi think it's mutar, but for different reasons. The Chachamim believe it's mutar because these aren't deemed to be fruits. Rabbi Yossi thinks that they are mutarim because it's zevzeh goreim. And that's the proof here that Rabbi Yossi believes that zevzeh goreim is mutar. All right, so we see from here that Rabbi Yossi believes that zevzeh goreim is mutar. If you want to suggest that Rabbi Yossi makes a distinction between other isurim where zevzeh goreim is mutar and avodah zarah where zevzeh goreim is asur, because you would think that avodah zarah is more serious or significant. Does he really make such a distinction? Vatanya, we have a braita. Sadesh nizdabla bezevel avodat kochavim. A field that was fertilized, manured with fertilizer or manure of avodat kochavim. Chen para shenitpatma bekarshinei avodat kochavim. And similarly, a cow that was fattened up with these grains of avodah zarah. As Rashi notes over here, that the karshinei avodat kochavim is shel tikrovet avodat kochavim. This is stuff that was presented or offered towards avodat kochavim. Oshe abdum, or they actually worship them. The only way this is going to be asur are as if these are items that are actually either used in the service of the avodah zarah, or if these items were actually worshipped themselves. Later on in the Gemara, Rashi will say that sheniz davla or bezevel avodat kochavim is a case where they shech the animals of tikrovet avodah zarah on the field, and then the blood that comes out from the shechita, that's what's fertilizing the field. That's what it means, zevel shel avodat kochavim. So in that case, we're using either tikrovet avodah zarah or avodah zarah itself. Tani chada, we have one braita that says, sadeh tizara, para tishachet. You're allowed to plant the field, and you're allowed to shech the para, meaning that they are mutarim. But tani idach, and we have an opposing braita, or seemingly a contradicting braita that says, sadeh tavur, the field you must leave fallow, upara tirzeh, and you have to wait for the cow to skinny down to lose the benefit that came from the karshinate of avodah zarah. My love, how would you explain the stira in the braitot? Harabi Yossi, harabonon. That is the machloke between Rabbi Yossi and the rabbonon. Rabbi Yossi, who says, zev zeh goreim is mutar, will say in this instance, both items are mutar, because the zevel is not the only contributing factor to the growth in that field, and therefore you can plant the field with the zevel in it. And similarly with the cow that fattened up on this karshinei avodat kochavim, that's not the sole sustenance of the cow. That wasn't the only thing that made it into what it is now. So again, those are zevzeh goreim, and Rabbi Yossi would say it's mutar, and that would be the braita that says it's okay. And the rabbanan would say zevzeh goreim is asur. By Tosafot point out over here that the case has to be a case where the item is not be'en. It's no longer around. So that, for instance, in a case of the zevel, the manure or the fertilizer or whatever it is that they're putting there, avodat kochavim, is already dissolved into the ground. It's already a part and parcel of the ground. That would also then be supportive of the fact that Rabbi Yossi believes zevzeh goreim is mutar, even by avodah zarah. And then you can't make the distinction there between avodah zarah and shari surim. That would seem to imply that Rabbi Yossi believes zevzeh goreim is mutar. So Gemara says, lo, Rabbi Eliezer ha-rabbonon. It's a machloket Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbonon, not Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbonon. Gemara says, hey, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbonon. Which machloket Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbonon are you speaking about? Elim, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbonon, this or, if it's speaking about some sort of rising agent that is used in order to cause the dough to rise, some sort of yeast or sour dough that causes it to rise. It's not. We have a Mishnah. Se'or shel chulin v'shel truma shenaflu l'toch ha'isa. You have a rising agent, one that is totally fine, the other one which is truma. They both fall into a dough. V'lo b'zeh k'dei l'chametz, v'lo b'zeh k'dei l'chametz. Each one independently doesn't have sufficient capacity to cause the dough to rise. V'nit starfu v'chimtzu. But the combination of the two could, and they did cause it to rise. V'lez omer achar acharon aniba. We go after the latter of the two rising agents that fell in there. That's the one that made the difference. Because the first one couldn't do it on its own. So only when the second one comes in does it happen. And therefore the second one is the more important one. And the second one will define whether this dough is dough of chulin or if this dough is dough of truma. If the chulin fell second, it would be chulin. If the truma fell second, it would be truma. B'chamim ormim, ben shenafal yisur l'chatchila, ben shenafal yisur l'basof, ein o asur ajay b'kudei l'chametz. Whether the isur fell in the first place, or whether they fell in the end, doesn't matter. It's not asur until the isur, this rising agent that is asur, like truma, or any other problem, until that in of itself has sufficient capacity to cause it to rise, then there's no problem. And even though normally truma is batel in 100 to 1, when it comes to a davar ha-machmitz, we had something like this similarly earlier on with a davar ha-ma'amid that causes the curdling of the milk into cheese. So too, when you have a davar ha-machmitz, something that causes something to rise and become chametz, it becomes so integral to the item that there's no bittul to a davar ha-machmitz. So over here, even though there might be sufficient bittul here to wipe out the truma aspect, it won't be batel because the truma itself is the machmitz. If the truma is the machmitz, that makes the whole item into an item of truma now. So clearly the Chachamim believe over here that ze v'zeh goreim is mutar. Because they're saying that only when it has the capacity alone to do it, is it a problem. But otherwise, ze v'zeh goreim would be mutar. Amar Abaye, and Abaye says about Rabbi Lezer's opinion, lo shanu elisha kadam v'silei k'day sur. That's only true if he pulled out the sur before the heter fell in. If he didn't come and pull out the isur before the chulin fell in, asur. Abaye suggests over here that the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer is because isur fell in, then the isur, the truma, is taken out, and then the chulin falls in. That's when Rabbi Eliezer says that if chulin falls in second, then the thing is mutar. And Rashi explains that that is because when the first seor falls in, even though in of itself it doesn't have the capacity to cause it to rise, it does bring the dough to the point at which it could rise. It gives the potential to that dough to rise if something else was added, or basically primes the dough for the capacity to then rise afterwards. And then when the second piece falls in, that piece is the goreim according to Abaye. And that's why you go acharon according to Abaye. On the other hand, if the chulin fell in second, but the isur is still there, then it is problematic. You see from that is that Rabbi Eliezer believes zev zeh goreim is asur. It's only because you took out the isur and then the chulin fell in that it works. But if you were to leave the isur in there, and then the contributing factors would be the isur and the chulin together, there the chachamim say zev zeh goreim is mutar. But Rabbi Eliezer believes zev zeh goreim is asur. So now the Gemara says umimai the time of Rabbi Eliezer k'dei Abaye. How do you know that Abaye is correct in his explanation of the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer? Dilma time of the Rabbi Eliezer mishum the achar acharon aniva. Maybe the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer has nothing to do with zev zeh goreim. It has to do with the fact that you go after the latter of the two that falls. Igamir b'isura asura. If it's finished off by isur, then it's asur. Igamir b'hetera mutarin. And if it's finished off by heter, then it is mutar. Ben silkei, ben lo silkei. Whether you removed or you didn't remove it, maybe Eliezer believes it's always after the latter factor or the latter two of the items that fell in. You could explain to Rabbi Eliezer even without a bayit. And he just believes that achar acharon aniba, that I always go after the last one. So whatever is the gemar is considered to be the ikar. However, if it's finished, it is problematic. But that means if they fail simultaneously, Rabbi Eliezer would agree, zev zeh goreim is mutar. And then you can't prove anything about the machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and the chachamim.
Gemara says, okay, El Rabbi Lezer Rabbanon de Eitzim. Maybe you're referencing to Rabbi Lezer and the Rabbanon about the issue of Eitzim.
And even though, as the Baalei Tosfot point out, we've already now dealt with the stira in the Braitot, because we can say that the author of the Braita that says Zev Zegorim Asur is authored by Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon, who both believe that Zev Zegorim is Asur, at least by Avodah Zarah. And the Braita that says it's Mutar will be both Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanon, who think that Zev Zegorim is Mutar. So in terms of the solution to the stira or the contradiction in the Braita, we've already solve the problem. The Baalei Tosafot say that nevertheless the Gemara wanted to figure out what this statement meant of Zeh Rabbi Eliezer, Zeh Rabbanan. Where do we find this difference between Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanan? And even further, is Abaye right in his understanding of Rabbi Eliezer's opinion? We want to find another Braita that would be supportive of Abaye's reading of Rabbi Eliezer, that Zeh Zeh Goreim is a sur according to Rabbi Eliezer, and not Mutar.
It's not. We have a Mishnah, Natale Mena Itzim. Person took wood off the Asherah. Asura ba'ana, that wood or those branches that come off the Asherah are surim ba'ana, like any other of that kochavim. Sik ba'tatanur, if he fires up the oven with that, chadash, if it's a brand new oven, yutats. The only thing to do with it is to break it, because since it was created and formed by the fire of Isurei Hana'a, it is permanently has a problem of Isurei Hana'a that it's embedded in it, because it was first fired up with wood of Isurei Hana'a. Yashan, if it's already an older oven that's already been fired up and hardened, then yutzan. All you have to do is wait for it to cool down, and then you can bring in the new heter and use it to cook and bake in that oven. Afabo et apat, if during that period of time that the wood was in there, he actually baked bread in there. Asura b'ana, that loaf of bread is asur b'ana. Nitar vabe acherim, if it got mixed up with acherim, or really, here it's acherot, kulan asurot b'ana, then the items it got mixed up with are all asur b'ana, because here you have a single isur hana that is then mixed in with other isurim. And since it's an identifiable object, it's a significant object, it's not batel berov, and it has an isur hana now on all these items that it is mixed in with. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Yolich hana liyam ha-melach. Rabbi Eliezer says the solution to the problem is that you take whatever benefit you got from these atzei asherah, and then you take that money and dump it in yam ha-melach. You basically redeem the hana'a that you're getting and place it onto that money, and you put that money in yam ha-melach. Amrulah, the Chachamim said to him, "In podin labadat kochavim, cannot redeem avodah zarah." According to Rabbi Eliezer, in this case, you have the capacity to remove the problem of avodah zarah by redeeming that isur hana'a and taking, or basically extracting the isur hana'a from the object that you created, and then disposing of that hana'a. Rashi over here says that the hana'a that you're getting is the dmei etzim, the value of the wood that is in the furnace, or that you used from the avodah zarah. That's the value you have to redeem, and that's what you throw into Yam HaMelech. On the other hand, the Baalei Tosafot disagree with Rashi, because the Gemara seems to indicate Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is premised on the fact that this Isur Hana got mixed up with other Devarim Shel Heter. You have a bunch of loaves of bread that are Heter, and then you have this Isur Hana that got mixed up with it. Only then do we allow you to redeem that one loaf that is mixed up with the other loaves. But that means if we knew where the loaf was, we wouldn't allow you to redeem it. According to Rashi, if the redemption is associated with the Dmei Eitzim, it has to do with the value of the wood that is there, then that should have application whether you're speaking about a loaf by itself, or a loaf that's nitarev with other loaves. And therefore, the Baalei Tosafot say that the Yolich Hana Liyam HaMelech here is a reference to Lekach Nira, the Peresh Hanat HaPak. It's the value of the loaf. B'necha de lo polig Rabbi Eliezer Peresha. And that's why Rabbi Eliezer doesn't argue on the earlier parts of that Mishnah and say that you can redeem it. Because the only thing you can do here is redeem that value of that one pot that's mixed up. So if you have 100 loaves of bread, and that one of them is that Isur Hana, then you take 1/100th of the value of all these loaves, and then you throw that the Yam HaMelech, and that way you dispose of the Hana'a that you would get from selling all these 100 loaves together, and you dispose of that piece of it. But that's only true when it's Nitarev, when it's mixed up with the other items of Heter, because there you can take out the Hana of the pot. But in the other cases, you can't take the Hana out of the item, and therefore, in all those other cases, it's going to be considered to be Asur, and that's why you have to break the oven if it was fired up for the first time, you have to cool it off, or if it's just pot by itself, you'd have to get rid of the pot. And as the Rishonim point out, there really is a fundamental difference in Rashi's understanding of the problem here versus many of the other Rishonim. Rashi believes the problem here is the harvacha, the benefit that you got. There's no real Isur that is created over here, because all of that is intangible. You burnt wood of Asherah, and that gave off heat. But there's nothing of the Asherah itself that is embedded in the pot itself, and therefore you don't have a Chefsa Shel Isur over here.
All you have is that your pocket benefited from the fact that you used Atzei Asherah, which are Asurim Bahana. So according to Rashi, all you need to do is remove that benefit that you got, that profit that you got from using the Atzei Asherah, which otherwise should have been Asur Bahana, and that's why you pay out that amount of money, and that can free you of the problem. But as Bala Mor, Bala Tosfot, and many other Rishonim point out, that would mean that you wouldn't need it to be mixed with anything else in order to grant that heter. That heter should apply all the time. But most of the Rishonim believe that, like the Gemara Pesachim says, Yesh Shevach Etzim Bapat, that there is some sort of benefit from the Etzim itself that embeds into the pot itself, and that makes it a pot shelisur. Not just being with a pot shelisur, we're not talking about just disgorging ill-gotten profits, we're dealing with an object of Isur. In that case, if the object's alone, you can't do anything with it. It's an object of Isur, you need to throw it out, you need to get rid of it because it has the Shevach Etzim in it. On the other hand, when it gets mixed up with other items, then you could say, you could segregate that item out and say, I have 100 versus 1. If I sell the 101, I can segregate that one and say I'm taking no profit on it, and only take profit on the 100. And that way, you're getting no benefit from the Isur. In the essence, you're just disposing of the Isur without getting any benefit for it. And that's why, first of all, you need it to be mixed with something else in order to do this. And number two is, what you're redeeming is, or what you are disgorging, is the actual value of the whole Isur, which is the pot itself, and not just about the Dmei Etzim. And that explains the difference in the view of Rashi versus the Balei Tosafot as to what you're trying to rectify in this situation, according to Rabbi Eliezer. But what is clear from here, absent the redemption over here, Rabbi Eliezer would believe that it's Asur, which means that Rabbi Eliezer really thinks that Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur, and that would be supportive of Abaye's reading of Rabbi Eliezer in the case of Seor, that Rabbi Eliezer really believes Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur. So now the Gemara is going to search for the Tano that says Zev Zeh Goreim is Mutar, or the Rabbanon, who are the opposing party to this Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbanan. Now the Gemara says, Rabbanon de Pelegi Alei de Rabbi Eliezer Maninhu. The Rabbanon here that argue in Rabbi Eliezer, who are these Rabbanan? Ilema Rabbanon de Etzim. If you want to say over here, it's the Rabbanon of Etzim, meaning the Rabbanon that were the Tanakam, or the beginning of the Etzim. Achmurei Machmirei. Over there, the Rabbanon are more Machmir than Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer allows you to redeem it, but the Chamim don't allow you to redeem it. El Rabbanon de Seor. Must be the Rabbanon of the case of Seor that we brought above. So now, what you have here is Rabbi Eliezer of the Mishnah of the Asherah and the wood of the Asherah. I believe Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur. Because even though there might be wood of Asherah and other wood in the oven, or in the case where you're firing up the oven, not for the first time, the oven itself or its contribution to the baking of the bread comes from both the Atzei Asherah now, as well as the other Etzim that fired it up in the past. So those two things are a joint contribution to the creation of the bread. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says it's Asur, and he makes you redeem it in order to get it out when it's mixed up in a tarovet. And if it's not in a tarovet, it remains Asur. So you see from there, Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur. The Gemara says, which Chachamim disagree with him? If it's the Chachamim that are found in that Mishnah about the Asherah, those Chachamim are the Chumra. They disagree with Rabbi Eliezer, so you can't even redeem it. They're even more Machmir than him. So if he says Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur, they're certainly not going to be saying Zev Zeh Goreim is Mutar. So where do we find a position that Zev Zeh Goreim is Mutar? That are the Rabbanon from the case of Seor above. In the case of Seor above, the Rabbanon said it doesn't matter if it falls in first or last, the Isur, as long as it itself cannot cause the dough to rise, or it's not a sufficient rising agent, then when it's mixed together with Heter, that Zev Zeh Goreim is Mutar. So now we found the authors of these Braitos. Rabbi Eliezer over here, from the case of Atzei Asherah, with the author of the Braita that said before, that Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur. In the case of the para that was fattened up by the Karshinei Avodat Kochavim, or the field that was fertilized by the Avodah Zarah, those are cases of Zev Zeh Goreim. According to Rabbi Eliezer of the Asherah, that would be Asur. And according to the Rabbana and Seor, Zev Zeh Goreim would be Mutar. Now we found the authors of our Braita, and it has nothing to do with Rabbi Yossi. Gemara says, Imar Dishmaylu Rabbanan Demekili B'Seor Be'Avodat Kochavim Mimekili. We saw before that the Rabbanan in that Mishnah were Mekil with Zev Zeh Goreim when it came to issues of Seor. Who says that they would also then extrapolate that position and believe the same thing is true by Avodah Zarah? Maybe by Avodah Zarah the Chachamim are more Machmir, and they agree that Zev Zeh Goreim is Asur. So how can you prove from the Rabbanon by Seor what their opinion would be by Avodat Kochavim? Elolam HaRabbi Yossi VaRabbanon. The authors of those brightos are Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon. But now we're in a problem. Because Rabbi Yossi believes Zev Zeh Goreim is Mutar. Yet in our Mishnah over here,
Rabbi Yossi seems to be believing that Zevizet Goreim is Asur. So how do we reconcile that? The Gemara answers, Rabbi Yossi Divrehem de Rabbanan Amar Luhu. That Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah is not speaking his own opinion, but he's speaking in the position of the Rabbanan. Lididi, according to my opinion, Rabbi Yossi says Zevizet Goreim is Mutar. Zevizet Goreim is Mutar, and therefore, when it comes to the shade of the tree, in the summertime, it's not a problem, because I think Zevizet Goreim is Mutar. But Lididhu, according to you, Darmitu Zevze Goreim Asur, that you generally believe that when there are two contributing factors to the growth of the item, then that is Asur. You should agree then by the vegetation in the wintertime that that should be problematic because that is Zevze Goreim and it should be Asur. If you look at the Rabbeinu Chananel, this is not like your traditional case where somebody says in the opinion of the other party, V'halcha b'mishnatenu, Rabbi Yossi, the divrehem de Rabbanan kamar, lehu, the didi, zevze goreim mutar, lididhu, diidluchu, zevze goreim asur, amai sharitu yirakot b'motak shamim. Why are you allowing the yirakot to be mutar during the motak shamim? Generally, when you say somebody is going to the other person's position, what you say is, Rabbi Yossi says, zevze goreim is mutar, and then when he speaks in the chachamim's position, he says the chachamim, even to you who hold zevze goreim asur, you should agree with me that Zevzeh Goreim Mutar in this case. But that's not the way this Gemara reads. This Gemara is reading that Rabbi Yossi is speaking in the position of the Rabbanan and saying, you, the Shitato, should be Machmir over here. It says, for me, this is all Zevzeh Goreim Mutar, and therefore I don't have any problem with the Yerakot that are growing under the tree. So even though, yes, the shade is not beneficial necessarily to them, on the other hand, the fertilizer, the sheddings that are coming down are beneficial to them. But it's Zevzeh Goreim, and it's Mutar according to me. But you, the Chachamim, who generally hold that Zevze Goreim is Asur, over here you should also believe it's Asur because this is a case of Zevze Goreim because of the sheddings of the tree. Now that's the reading of the Ritva who believes now that the Gemara is rejecting what the Baal Tosafot had said before, that you can't have Zevze Goreim when it's two different Gormim. And over here you see the Gemara says that even Betzel and the earth, that's called Zevze Goreim. The other hand, the Ramban and others believe that the Gemara still believes that there's a difference in Gormim. The Ramban claims that he's not saying the Dibrahim of the Chachamim in our Mishnah, but rather according to the Chachamim in the Mishnah earlier that said that when you're Zura the Ruach, it could be Zevel. He's saying it in their opinion because the Chachamim in our Mishnah clearly believe that that's not classified as Zevzeh Goreim because the things that are being Goreim here are totally separate. There's Tzel and Nibiyah, and those two do not overlap. And that's how the Ramban avoids changing that whole position that the Baal Tosafot suggested, that Zevzeh Goreim only applies when the Gormim are of a similar ilk or a similar nature. That's in the Chachamim of our Mishnah over here. But the Mishnah earlier on about Zerah the Ruach, over there those Chachamim don't believe that. And therefore, they are the ones that Rabbi Yossi is saying over here, Lidivrehem. According to your reasoning, over here you should say that it is Asur. And the Rabbanan answer him, Banan Kadama Rav Mari, Braid the Rav Kana. They will answer him like we saw at the end of yesterday's daf, like Rav Mari, Braid the Rav Kana, that you have to look at the total net benefit that comes over here. And here the net benefit is negative, because the shade is detrimental to the vegetation, the sheddings are beneficial, but the detriment of the shade far exceeds the value of the fertilizer that is provided. Therefore, on the net basis, it's actually a negative. Again, we mentioned yesterday that the Rambam says that the problem is not the shade from the sun, but rather the shade from the rain, that it's blocking the rain from coming down there. But either way, whatever the negative association of the shade is, that far exceeds the value that's added through the fertilizer. Therefore, on a net basis, it is a negative. And that's why the Chachamim believe that it's mutar, because it's not a case of Zevzeh Goreim, because all the gormim here are gormim shel heter. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. So you have a Masorah here from Rabbi Yehuda, and the name of Shmuel, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, and that Zevzeh Goreim is mutar. And how ginta dizdabel bezavla davodat kochavim, there was this garden that was fertilized with fertilizer of avodah zarah. And again, as I pointed out before, Rashi over here makes the comment that it's from the animals of avodah zarah that are being shechted over there. The blood goes into the ground, and that's what's fertilizing, because it's tikrovet avodah zarah. Because if it's simply an item that is being dedicated to avodah zarah, we already said earlier in the Masechta, there's no such thing as hekdesh by avodah zarah. So even if they're makdish something towards the avodah zarah, it has no impact on the item. And therefore, that can't be the explanation of what's happening here in the field that he put in fertilizer avodah zarah, unless it was either avodah zarah itself, and most likely they're not worshipping the dung. On the other hand, it could be something that is tikrovet avodah zarah, something that was used in the worship of the avodah zarah. That's what Rashi notes. If they're shechting the animals and the blood is spilling onto the ground, then that is considered to be tikrovet avodah zarah, And that's the problem over here. And Shalach Rav Amram committed Rav Yosef. So Rav Amram sent Rav Yosef to find out what the din should be with this field. The halacha is like Rav Yosef, and therefore you would be permitted to plant such a field. Again, assuming that the fertilizer was already absorbed into the ground and was not visible anymore, you'd be allowed to use the field, and the product of that field would be Zev Zegurim and be Mutar. Alright, next Mishnah. Natalmi Men Eitzim Asurim Ba'ana'a. So this is the Mishnah that you just quoted on the previous Amud, which is if you have an Asherah, and you took branches off of it, the branches are Surbana, Hesik Ba'anet Tanur, he fires up the oven with them. Im Chadash, if it's a brand new oven, Yutatz, it must be destroyed. V'im Yashan, if it is an older oven, Yutzan, then you just have to simply cool it off, and then you refire it up with new wood, and it'll be Mutar, because then the Eitzim of Isur are not making a permanent contribution to the oven, as opposed to when it's brand new and you fire it up with these Eitzim of Isur Bana, they give a contribution to the oven that will always be there in the future. That'll make it an issue, as we discussed before, of Zev Zeh Goreim in the future. Afabo et apat, if he baked bread in it, Asura Bana, the pot itself, the bread itself is Asur Bana. Nitar va be'acherot, if that loaf of bread got mixed up with other loaves of bread that were of Heter, Hulam Asura Bana, they're all problematic because there's no bitul over here. And the reason that it's not batel will have to do with the fact that this is the Chomer of Avodah Zarah, and so therefore we won't allow it to be batel because it's an Iser Hana of a Kol Shuhu. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Yolichana Liyam HaMelech. Rabbi Lezer, and as we noted in the previous Amud, says you take out the value and you put it in Yam HaMelech, and as we discussed before, Rashi thinks that means the value of the Eitzim, and Tosfot thinks that's the value of the loaf, its bread itself. You can't redeem Avodah Zarah. Natale Menu Karkot. If he took off of the tree, he broke off a piece of wood that is either used for the whorl of the spindle, the wooden piece in the middle of the spindle, or it's being used for the shuttle. So in either case, the wood now is being used in the weaving process. So if he took off or broke off a piece of branch or wood from the tree in order to use it in that capacity, asur bana, that item is asur bana. Arak bo et habeged, if he used that to weave a piece of clothing, asur bana, the piece of clothing that's produced is also asur bana. Nitarei ba'acherim, if it got mixed up with others, ba'acherim ba'acherim, and those others are mixed up with even more items, kulan asurim ba'ana. All of those items are asur bana. In the previous Amud, the Balei Tosafot speak about the girsa. The Rabbeinu Tam believes, and it's a couple places in Shas, that these Mishnayot, that the only thing that should be said on it is acherim, if they got mixed up with one item. But then it should not say in the Mishnah that it got mixed up with other items afterwards. First of all, you have this loaf of Isur. It falls into 100 loaves of Heter. And then afterwards, one of those loaves of the 101 now falls into another group of loaves of bread. Based on that, it would be saying that the first group is asur, and the second group is asur. That's what it means, acherim, and then acherim ba'acherim. The Rabbeinu Tam does not like that girsa, because he speaks about a position of Shmuel that speaks about a sfek sveka. And the Gemara is looking all over Shas to find a Mishnah that's supportive of his view with regards to the sfek sveka. And the Gemara never brings these Mishnayot, including our Mishnah, that says it's acherim and acherim ba'acherim. That's a classic case of sfek sveka. You have a sfek in the first grouping as to whether the iser is in there, and then you have a secondary sfek when that one of those group falls into another group. Is that the one of isur that came out of the original group? And does that affect the next group? And that's a sfek sveka. And so Tosafot, it says, by the mere fact that the Gemara doesn't bring that to deal with Shmuel's statement about sfek sveka, shows you that it doesn't exist here. Although the Balei Tosafot themselves bring from the Ri, Bar Baruch Omer, the Shaper Garsinale, you can leave the Girsin of Acherim and Acherim Be'Acherim, or in the first case of the Mishnah would be Acherot and Acherot Be'Acherot, because V'dilma Lekel Echad HaSveika, that there's only one Sveik over here. There's not a Sveik Sveika, V'Achi Perusho, V'Acherim Be'Acherim, Kol Utan Acherim Nitarvu Be'Acherim. It's not that one loaf came out of the group that was the mixture now, and then landed into another group, and the next group is Asur. It's a case where you had the loaf of Isur that fell into 100 loaves of Heter, and that whole bunch of 101 now falls into another group of 100, 200, 300, whatever it is, or possibly that Rove of the first group fell into the second group, and we're going to assume when Rove falls in, that means that the loaf for sure is in that second group. That's when we say that it's Asur, because then for sure the Isur moved along with it, and that's what makes them all Asur, but also that would explain it's not Sfek Sveka. There's only one Sfek here. Is the loaf that you're going to take from this group, the loaf of Isur, not the loaf of Isur.
So the Rebar Baruch says that Rabbeinu Tam's point is not necessarily true, because here you can have a case of Acherim Bacherim, or Acherot Bacherot, when there's no problem of Sveik Sveika, because there's only one Sveik, and that's either because the whole first group fell into the second group, or the Rove, or the majority of the first group, fell into the second group. In that case, we're going to assume for sure that the Isser is there, and therefore when you're looking at any loaf of bread there, it's a question whether it's Isser or Heter. That's only one Sveik. That's why the Gemara doesn't bring it in the context of Shmuel, but yet you can still have that girsa in the Mishnah. Rabbi Elezer Omer, Yolicha Nali Yama Melech. Rabbi Elezer over here again says, you take the value and throw it into Yama Melech. So according to Rashi, that would be just the value of the spindle that you'd have to put into Yama Melech. According to Bali Tosafot, it's the beged that was woven by the using the Sisereana. That beged you'd have to redeem or dump the money in Yama Melech, as opposed to the remainder of the begadim, which you could accept compensation for. Amrilo, Ein Pidyon of that Kochavim. The Chachamim respond to him again the same way, which is that you can't redeem a Avodah Zarah. Mar says, Vitzricha, you need both halves of the Mishnah here. The Mishnah brought you two examples. Example of pot, and example of weaving. Deish Rabbeinu Kamaita, if you only talking about the case of pot, V'hakam Rabbi Elezer Mishum Idna Deka Gamra Pot Kalila Isura. The reason Rabbi Elezer thinks that you can be Mekil in the Hana'ah in the case of pot is because at the time that the Hana'ah, the benefit, enters into the pot, the Isur is gone, meaning that you burnt up the Atzei Asherah, they no longer exist. And the only thing it did was impart either flavor or the cooking or baking of the item. Meaning the baking of the bread was contributed by the heat source of the Atzei Asherah, but that's not readily visible. The Atzei Asherah are gone. You can't see them in the loaf of bread. And that's why Rabbi Lez over there says you can redeem it. But in the case of Karkod or Karkor, in the case where it is the spindle, the ita li isura b'enei, that remains intact. Even after you finish weaving, the isura ana is still here. Ema modi l'rabbonon. Maybe over there you would agree to the rabbonon. You can't be podet. You can't redeem it. Ve'i ashminen karkor, or karkod ba'akami rabbonon. If you only told me the second half of the Mishnah, by the case of the whirl of the spindle or the shuttle, that's where the rabbonon say you can't redeem it. How about pot? In the case of bread, maybe they would agree to Rabbi Lezer, because over there, the Hana disappears, it's no longer extant, and it's just a intangible item that is now found in the bread. Maybe they would agree with him. Kamash Malon, Tzricha. That's why we need both of the Ibabot of the Mishnah to tell you that they argue in both instances. Am Rabbi Chia, Breid Rab, Rabba, Bar Nachmani, Am Rabbi Chista, Am Rabbi Ziri, Aloha, Rabbi Eliezer. Aloha is like Rabbi Eliezer, that you can dump the Hana in Yama Melech and deal with the remainder of the items there. Iga d'amrei, some say Amar Rav Chista, Amar li Abba bar Rav Chista, Hachi Amar Ziri Alocha k'Rabbi Eliezer. So there's a different mesorah as to how it was passed down. Amar Avada bar Abba lo shanu elapat. That's only true when you're dealing with bread. Aval chavit, if you're dealing with barrels, lo. That is not true. Rav Chista Amar afilu chavit mutaret. That even if it's dealing with barrels, it is mutar, or that the binyan of Rabbi Eliezer still is in effect. Now, first of all, the reason to differentiate between pot and yayin over here is either because we're dealing with yayin nesech, which is a much more significant and serious isur, and that's why you would say that it's problematic, or because the barrels are considered to be a davar shebiminyan or a davar choshuv, and therefore they are not batel. And that would precipitate the difference in din between that of the pot and that of the chavit. Number two is, Rashi points out here that everyone agrees that you're able to sell these barrels. It's just a question of how you can sell these barrels. According to Rav Chista, all you have to do is redeem the barrel that's problematic, and then you can sell the barrels out one by one. They're still asur b'shti'ah, but now they are mutar b'hana'ah, and that heter b'hana'ah now lets them sell them out or feed them to your workers or give them to whomever you choose, because you've gotten rid of the problem of isur that is there. On the other hand, Ravada Ba'avo believes that that is not the case, and that what you can do is sell all the barrels together in one shot and leave out the value of that barrel. So you can sell the barrels, excluding that barrel from the hana that you're going to get. So the machloke between them, as Rashi points out, and the Bali Tosafot also second this, is that according to Rav Chista, the redemption allows you then to sell them off or utilize them one by one. Whereas according to Ravada Ba'avo, the only way you can liquidate these barrels is to sell them all in a block, and then leave out the value of the Isur so that you're getting no Hana from the Isur. And as Rashi points out, there is a machloket about that later on in the Masechta between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim as to whether when you have Yain Nesach that falls into the pressing pit, can you sell that wine? And over there, there's a machloket as whether you can sell it absent the Isser of Nayav Yayin Nesach or not. Rashi points out that that's not connected necessarily to our machloket over here, because both of those positions hold like the Rabbonon over here. Because over there, you're not doing any pidyon. You're not redeeming the Isser, and you're not then freeing it up to be sold on a one-month basis. Rather, you're just selling it and excluding the Hana'ah that you would have gotten from that item. And that, the Balei Tosafot point out, why can't you say the same thing with regards to the clothing or the pot in our Mishnah? And he says from the Yerushalmi that there's a difference, because in the cases of our Mishnah, these are items that Jews will buy from a goy. And then the Jew might buy this Dover Isur. On the other hand, by Nayin Nesach, you have no worries. Nobody's going to buy Yayin from a goy. Never you sell it to the goy and leave out that Hana'ah that you would have gotten. It's out of the realm of any possibility of someone then coming into contact with this Isur. And for that reason, the Rashi says that the ability to sell it minus the Hana'ah is open according to all the opinions over here, and even might be open to our cases in our Mishnah. In each of those instances, there's a problem, either by begging and pot, because that could be sold to a Jew later on, or here by the case of Chaviyot, it is permitted even according to Rabat or Ba'ava. The question is, can you sell them off one by one? And that's only according to Rav Chisda, who allows for the redemption. And that's the meaning of the next part of the Gemara when it says, How Gavra did Arav Le Chavita the Yayin Nesach Vichamrei? This individual had some Yayin Nesach that got mixed up in his barrels. After the command of Rav Chisda, he came before Rav Chisda, Amar, Shkol Arba Zuze, take 4 zuz, which is the value of that barrel, Vishadi Benaro, throw it into the river, Vinishtarilach, and then I'll make it mutar for you to then sell them off one by one, not to make it het there that you could drink it or anything of that sort. You can get hanah from it now, and you cannot drink it. So then you'll be able to liquidate them one by one, and you won't have to worry that there's isur there, because you've already gotten rid of the problem of the hana'ah that is associated with it. And that, as the Balei Tosafot would say, is similar to what Rashi said before, that you can sell each barrel, and not sell them in a block, leaving out the isur hana'ah. Next Mishnah. Ketzad mevatla. How are you mevatla in Ashera? Here same, vizireid. If he pruned it or trimmed it, your same Rashi says he takes off the dead branches or the kindling from it. Zireid is even takes off the moist branches from it. Natami mena makel, he broke off a staff from it. Osharvit, or he took off a scepter or something that's used as a prodder. Afilu ale, even if he just picked off a leaf. Harzeh b'teila, that is considered to be batel, because of the fact that if it was a bodhisara, he would not be permitted to use it at all or take any benefit from it. So the fact that he's already taking items off it or picking off of it is a clear indication that he doesn't view this as a avodah zarah, or he's no longer treating it like a avodah zarah. Shipa, this is something we saw earlier in the parak. Shipa l'tzorcha, if he planed it or shaved it down for its own benefit, asura. Shalo l'tzorcha, if it was done not for the benefit of the item, but he's planing it down or cutting it down for his own benefit, mutarit, then that's considered to be bitul of the avodah zarah. So now, otan shapin mateilin, the shavings, or the sawdust that comes off of the planing and the shaving down of the avodah zarah, what's the status of it? With regards to when he does it, shalo l'tzorcha, he does it not for the purpose of the avodah zarah, but for his own purposes. He's cutting off a piece of wood, or he's shaving it down, or sanding it down. In that case, it's clear that everything is mutar, because he's mevatel the core avodah zarah when he does that, because it's clear he's treating it not in a way of veneration or deference towards it, but rather he's using it for his own purposes. So if it's not itself avodah zarah, certainly the shavings or the dust that comes off of it is not considered to be avodah zarah. On the other hand, by the case where he does it litzorcha, he does it for the benefit of the avodah zarah itself. He's polishing it up, he's shaping it up, he's doing something to fix it. In that case, the question of the Gemara is, what happens to the shavings? The avodah zarah remains avodah zarah. The question is, the shavings or the sawdust that comes off of that, what's the story? So, plegi bar Rav Huna v'chia barav, smachloga Rav Huna v'chia barav, chadamar asurim. One of them said it's problematic. Chanamar mutarim, they're fine. Tanya, gemand amar mutarim. We have a braita that supports the one who says that they are mutar, the Tanya. Ove kuchavim, shishipa, avodat kuchavim, litzorcho. This is the braita that we quoted back on Membet Amud Aleph. Even Ove kuchavim shaves down, shapes, planes, the avodah zarah, litzorcho, for his own purposes, he, vishaveeha, mutarim. The avodah zarah, and the dust that comes off, or the shavings that come off, are mutarim. The tzorcha, if he does it for the benefit of the avodah zarah itself, he has surah, then the avodah zarah itself remains. The avodah zarah is not being mevatelet, because he's doing it lanoi, to do, decorate, or to improve the avodah zarah. The shafa'a mutarim. And the shavings that come off of this are considered to be mutarim, because of the fact that, when he does that, he's automatically mevatel the items that come off of it. And that'd be like the person who says they are mutarim. So Itmar,
Avodat kochavim shenishtabra, avodat kochavim that fell or fell apart, and the gears of the baches shenishtabra me'eleha, it fell apart by itself. Rav amar tzarich lebatel kol kesam v'kesam, you have to mevatel every little piece or every little shever that comes off of it. Shmuel amar avodat kochavim ina b'teila derech delata, that the avodat kochavim is not batel except if that's the way that it grows. So adarabo, that doesn't make any sense. Derech delata mi mevatlo. If that's the natural way that it grows, then why would it be batel? Elachi gemar. Ein avodat kochavim tzricha lebatel ela derech gedelata. That the avodah zara only needs to be annulled or nullified if that's the natural way that it grows. So lema bahaka miflegeh. Let us say the machloket here between Rav and Shmuel is the following. Demar sabo ovdim lishvarim. Umar sabar ein ovdim lishvarim. Rav believes that they worship not only the avodah zara itself, but even the pieces of avodah zara when it falls apart. Or it comes apart, they worship the pieces. Therefore, Rav says, it's not enough that the item fell apart. It's not even enough that you mevatel the piece of Avodah Zarah. You have to mevatel each piece of the Avodah Zarah, because each piece now independently is something that they worship. And they would continue to worship, and that's why, over here, you need a bittul for each kesam v'kesam, for each splinter, or each toothpick, or little piece of wood, the Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, Shmuel believes that they don't worship the Shvarim. So if it already broke into pieces, the mere fact that it wasn't the natural way for it to go, and it broke into pieces, that's enough to deem it as if it's batel already. And this, according to the Baal Tosafot, accords with Shmuel's position earlier in the Perek, which would then be joined with Reish Lakish, because the Baal Tosafot back then thought that Reish Lakish and Shmuel's positions were symbiotic, and that they both believed that Avodah Kochavim Shenishtabra Me'eleha, Avodah Kochavim that falls apart by itself, is mutar. And this would be Shmuel the Shittato here. The Gemara says, well, the Kuliyama Ovdim Lishvarim. Everybody agrees that they worship these pieces. Now Rashi points out that this view within Shmuel actually contradicts what we saw earlier in the Perek, which is Afilu Shivre Avodat Kochavim Mutarim Bahana'a L'Motza'an. That's Shmuel's position earlier in the Perek. And how does that reconcile with the fact that over here he says that Shvarim are problematic, according to this? So Rashi answers that the difference is that back there, we didn't see the source of the Shivrei Avodat Kochavim. And therefore, we will assume that they came from something that was Nitbatel Ayedei Degoy. On the other hand, in our case over here, we know where this came from. Because it's a Avodah Zarah Shenishtabru Me'eleha. We saw it and we know that it's collapsed on its own weight or in of itself. And therefore, it's not going to be considered to be Mutar according to Shmuel. And this is Rashi Lashitato that he differentiates between Shmuel and Reish Lakish. Shmuel's din is not necessarily synonymous with Reish Lakish's din, and therefore Avodah Zarah Shenishtabra Me'eleha will be problematic, like the Gemara over here, according to Shmuel. Whereas the Gemara back there is speaking about when you find pieces away from the Avodah Zarah, you have no idea what the source is, you can assume it came from something that was Nitbatel, and that's why it's Mutar over there. The Baal Tosafot don't like Rashi's answer because of a question that they ask based on the Shakla Vatari of the Gemara back on Daf Mem Aleph, but also because they fundamentally believe that Shmuel and Reish Lakish have synonymous positions. And therefore they give two possibilities that differentiate Shmuel here from Shmuel earlier. The first one is that over here it's talking about an item that naturally sheds some of the things that are on it. And that's why he thinks the Shvarim over here are problematic, as opposed to what he saw earlier, where those are pieces of some idol or Asherah. Or, he gives another possibility, is that over there they're speaking about a case where he found just pieces lying around, not any connection to the whole Avodah Zarah. Whereas over here he finds all the pieces of the Avodah Zarah together, and it's all one big pile or one big unit, and therefore he's certain as to where it came from, and those types of Shvarim are problematic. Versus the Shvarim over there were just pieces that are separated from whatever was possibly the Ikar Avodah Zarah. And the Ritva actually, somewhat along those lines, makes a distinction, which is that over there, the entire thing broke. Mishtabra Me'eleha, and that's where Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish argue about what the status of that item is over there. But over here, the Ikar Avodah Kochavim is still intact. And then pieces of it have come off the Avodah Zarah. So since the Goy has his core Avodah Zarah, what does he feel about those little pieces that fell off of it? Or in other words, for Reish Lakish, over there, the Avodah Zarah didn't save itself, so that's why he's not going to worship it. But over here, where the Avodah Zarah was able to quote-unquote save itself, because it's still intact, just the pieces are there, then he's not going to give up his worshiping of this item or this Avodah Zarah. He's not going to be mevatel it. Or you could even say the other way around, that Rabbi Yochanan might admit over here that it's fine, because the Ikar Avodah Zarah is still intact, and therefore he ascribes all the power to that. And the Shvarim, he says, are nothing. Versus the case earlier,
where all the shvarim are there, and that's all he has left, and therefore he will not be mevatelet.
V'acha b'shivrei shivarim. Here we're talking about very minute pieces, or the pieces of pieces over here. Kamiflukei. That's where they argue. Marasav b'shivrei shvarim asurim. Rav believes that not only are the pieces worshipped, but even when it's broken down into more minute pieces, they still worship it, and it's asur. Marasav b'shivrei shvarim mutarim. And Shmuel believes that once you get down to that type of minutia, then it's already considered to be batel. They worship it when at least pieces of it are intact, or there's a semblance of the original item. But where it's completely gone, meaning it's already broken down another stage or another level, that already they don't worship, and that's why you don't need bitul. In that case, it's batel me'aleha. Ve'ibayitema, and some suggest that, this is the machlok, the kuliyama shivrei shvarim mutarim. Everybody already agrees that these minute pieces are mutarim. Ve'acha ba'vodat kochavim shel chuliyot, the machloket here is a case where it's avodah zarah that is made of component parts, and if the component parts fall apart, the regular layperson could put it back together. It's like a piece of furniture from IKEA. So it comes in its pieces, you can put it together. If it falls apart, you get the instruction booklet out, you can put it back. You don't need an expert to put it together. So to over here, the case of the avodah zarah is a case where it's made up of component parts that a hedjot could put back together. Rav believes that since a layperson could put it back together, that's not considered to be batel. Even if it falls apart, he can easily reassemble it, and therefore it remains with the status of avodah zarah. As Rashi notes over here, that these items, or these chuliyot, that they are delicate parts, or small parts that have the status like shivrei shvarim. The only question is, here the shivrei shvarim can be reassembled into something that is a whole. So they are not shvarim, because we said already everybody believes that shvarim are asurim. Question is, by shivrei shvarim. So then we said, by shivrei shvarim, everybody says it's mutar. So then why in this case, if they're deemed to be like shivrei shvarim, is it asur, according to Rav, if it's already in pieces? That's because of hedjot. The lay person could put it back together so easily that it's considered as if it's assembled already. On the other hand, Umar Saber Shmuel believe in avodat kochavim b'teila elo darch delata, that it's only batel the way it grows, dahino or chay, because that's the natural way. V'hav lav g'delatai, and this is not the natural way that it grows. Ve'en tzrikha levatel, and then you don't need to be mevatelet. Or what in essence Shmuel is saying after the emendation that we had above is that if a tree is shedding leaves, or a tree is shedding any piece of a fruit or branches from it, that's a natural growth of the tree. And that breaking of the tree, or those pieces falling off the tree, the Ovid of Zarah is not going to think that his tree is batel just because it's going through its natural process, where it sheds and it lets things off. And therefore, those items that fall off of it will require bitul, because there's no assumed bitul. He believes that it's a part of the natural growing process of the tree. That means the tree remains asur, and so do the pieces that fall off of it. On the other hand, here, where this item is supposed to be assembled, and it's not the natural state for it to be disassembled or for it to fall apart, so therefore it's in component pieces, that's already lo derech delata. That's not the natural way for it to be. And if it's broken, then the Ovid of Azara is going to give up hope and say, this Azara can't save itself, it's not going to save me, and he'll automatically be mevatelet, or he will null assigning any powers to this item, because of the fact that it can't protect itself. So even though a hedjot could reassemble it, that's not enough, because this isn't the natural way it should go. If it broke, that's enough of a reason to say it's batel, according to Shmuel. All right, with that, we end the parak. Adon alach, kol etzlamim. Now we begin the next parak. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, shlosh amanim, zo, bitzad morkulus. If you have three stones that are laid out next to each other in a row, but they are next to a markulus, which is mercury, or the avodah zarah that we've discussed before, where they used to have it at the parsheta drachim, at the forks in the road. They used to pile up like a pyramid of stones. It was two stones on the bottom and one stone on top of it that represented the mercury. So then, if he has these three stones that are near this mercury, asurot, they're problematic. Ushtayim, if there are only two stones there, mutarot, then it's okay. But chamim orim, shenirot imo asurot, those that are seen together with the avodah zarah of the markulus are asurot. Mutarot, those that are not visible with it, they are considered to be mutar. So the question is, these other stones that are found next to the big markulus, what is the status of these stones? Are these stones considered to be tegrovet avodah zarah? Meaning that these are items that were used in the worship of this markulus, which is throwing these stones at the big markulus. And so the stones that you find around it are also problematic because of Tikrovet of Azarak. Kameims then limit that scope to say it's only when it's near Itumo, when it looks like it's part and parcel of it, but something that's further away is not problematic. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel, as we're going to see in the Gemara, is going to suggest that the bricks that are laid out next to each other are an indication of a smaller Markulus that sat in front of the bigger Markulus, and that's why they're Asurim. Whereas if you have less than the three requisite stones that you need to make the Markulus, then, of course, it's not going to be Asur because you didn't make it into a Markulus. And as Rashi points out, the Gemara at first in the Hava Mina assumes, V'hata lo choshiv lo tikrovet. In the beginning, the Gemara is not going to assume that those stones that were thrown there were actually tikrovet, a way of worshipping the Markulus, but rather that they are avodat kochavim b'fnei atzma. When you throw the stone at it, it becomes added or joined onto the Markulus and becomes a part of the avodah zarah. And therefore, if a stone falls away, it would be considered shivrei avodah zarah. Later on, the Gemara will then move to a position like we explained, that it's tikrovet, and that these stones are part of the service of the Markulus, and then there'd be no way to be mevatel it, because tikrovet avodah zarah has no bitul. But at this point, or this stage in the Mishnah, and then in the beginning of the Gemara, they're going to assume that it is an extension of the Markulus and part of the avodah zarah itself. Bishlamar Rabbanan Kasavre, Ovdim Lishvarim. So they believe that they do worship Shvarim, or these broken pieces, or these stones on the floor. Nirotimo, something that is visible together with the Markulus. And you could say that it was from those that worshipped it, or the stones that were thrown at it that fell there at Sarot. Shani Rotimo, on the other hand, things that are not within the visible area of the Michaelis, you can assume those stones were not part of the worship. They were stones that were there before or left there. Rabbi Shmuel, Michael Silver. What's the reason behind Rabbi Shmuel's position? If they worship even these smaller pieces, over here, the Shvarim is not really the smaller pieces. It means that the items that were thrown towards the Markulus, they become a addition to the Avodah Zarah itself, and they worship it. The Chamim say yes. And that's why they say if it's within the scope of influence of the Markulus, then that's considered to be a sur, because it becomes a part and parcel of the Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, what does Rabbi Yishmael believe? If he believes that you do worship the Shvarim, or these items that are to grow with Avodah Zarah become a part of the Markulus and now a bigger Avodah Zarah, then afilu tarte inami litzar. Then why should it matter whether there's three or two? Even two should be problematic. If they don't worship the Shvarim, meaning the pieces that are thrown at it don't become a part of the Avodah Zarah, afilu tlat namilo. Even if he has three next to each other, they shouldn't be problematic at all. So Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef bar Yochanan biyadua shenishru mimenu divrei hakol asurot. If you know that these stones fell away from the Markulus, then for sure they are asurot. Afilu l'man damar ein ovdim l'shvarim. Even according to one who says we don't generally worship these pieces, hanimile avodat kochavim, that's only a case with the Avodah Zarah. It's not the normal way to do it. Over here, from the outset, where the stones that they're making into the Markulus are broken, and the whole thing is about these stones that are thrown are broken pieces of stone, so since that's the essential part of this Avodah Zarah, then the stones that are broken around it are also going to be considered to be a part and parcel of it. Where do they argue? Bistamo. When they are just stones there, and we don't know whether they came from the Markulus or they didn't come from the Markulus. Vimikuravot, namaika the Meimar, Mineina Fao, Divirkol Asurot. If they are proximate to the Markulus itself, then everybody agrees those are Asurim because you're going to assume they fell from the Markulus because they're so close to the Markulus, therefore they fell. Rashi over here says, what does that mean, close? Gagon ba'ama v'chatzi ama. Whether it's an ama way or a half ama way, I mean, that's really proximate to it. Ki plige, when they argue is when they are further away from the Markulus than being really proximate to it, and we find stones there, do you assume they're part of the Avodah, a part of the Tikrovet of this item, or maybe even a part of the Avodah Zarah itself? Bitzad Markulus Kadani. Doesn't it say that the items were found right next to the Markulus? My Bitzad, what does it mean right next to it? Bitzad Arba Amot today, within 4 Amot of it. And so that's what Rashi explains over here, that Meruchukot mean 4 Amot away from it. Those are far enough away whereby they didn't necessarily fall from it. And that's where you have the machlok between Rabbi Yishmael and the Chachamim. On the other hand, when you're speaking about within an Amah or Chatzi Amah, very proximate to it, in that case, everybody agrees that it probably fell from the Markulus and it is problematic. Rabbi Yishmael, Savar, Osim Markulus Katan, Bitzad Markulus Gadol. Rabbi Yishmael believes that everybody agrees, according to Rashi, that when you're 4 Amot away already, it's not considered to be a part and parcel of the original Markulus or part of the Tikrovet of that Markulus. So then why would Rabbi Yishmael make it a sur? Because Rabbi Yishmael believes that they used to make a smaller mercury next to the bigger mercury. So now, shalosh, if you find three things that are next to each other, three stones, the damila Markulus,
That's similar to the structure of a Michaelis that includes three stones, even though now they're not together in the shape of a Michaelis, but nevertheless, they're there in a row, which makes it look like they might have been connected to each other. Asurot. Shtayim, if there are only two there, it's mutarot, because that wasn't a Michaelis Katan. Rabbanan, Sabreinu, see Michaelis Katan, but Sad Michaelis Gadol. And the Chachamim say that they don't make the smaller mercury next to the bigger mercury. Loshna shalosh, loshna shtayim. So it doesn't matter whether you have three there or two there. Nirotimo asurot. If they're very proximate to it, they are problematic. Shenirotimo, if they're further away, even within four amot, but they're further away, then they're not considered to be a part and parcel of the Michaelis itself. And that's why they would be mutarim b'hana'ah. They wouldn't be a problem at all. Now that's the view of Rashi, that the difference between krovot and meruchakot is all within four amot, which is the sphere of influence of the Michaelis. And just a question of how proximate it is. If it's very close, then we assume that as if it fell off that avodah zarah, and it's a part and parcel of it because that's the nature of worshipping this avodah zarah. If it's further away, then we assume that it's just stam avanim. Elim Kane, according to Rabbi Yishmael, it's set up in a certain structure, which evidences that there was a Michaelis Katan also over here. The Chachamim say even in that structure, it's not normal to have that. And therefore, those are considered to be separate from the Michaelis and not a problem. And then the definition of Betzad Arba Amot, according to Rashi, means within the four Amot of the Michaelis. Because according to the Balei Tosafot, the Arba Amot over here are defining Krovot, or those things within four Amot that's close to it. Anything which is in the sphere of influence of the Michaelis, that's considered to be a part of it. And Ruach HaKod is outside of the four Amot. And you can see a similar sentiment in the Rabbeinu Chananu, who says, Mikuravo, nami bitoch dalet amot. The Mikuravo means within the four amot. And therefore, the definition of Bitzad Arba Amot Tav would mean those that are more than four amot away. Although there are those that suggest that Bitzad Arba Amot Tav means exactly four amot away. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Nun Amud Aleph.